It is Saturday, the 2nd of May, 2015, and this is episode 244 of Digital Outbox. Welcome to a weekend episode of Digital Outbox. I'm Chris, hosting today, joined by Ian. How's your weekend going?
It's going great. I've done lots of chores and I'm celebrating Chris's bank holiday weekend.
It's Star Wars weekend. It must mean my birthday's coming up. Bank holiday, here we come. Beautiful.
It's not. It's grey. It's grey and quite cool.
It's pretty crappy outside, to be honest. There we go. It'll be sunny by Monday. Microsoft are also celebrating my birthday, and they've been doing so by talking about all their latest stuff in Microsoft Build, the conference, and several kind of big announcements, really, I guess, or as to the direction they're heading in. Firstly, they want to set up Office as a platform rather than a suite of applications, basically. So they want to be able to allow developers to inject in little modules and features into their own Office suite. I think one of the examples given was Uber taxis hooking into your calendars, so you can sync up someone a cab being available for the end of your meeting.
Which does make some sense. When I read the first bit, I was like, really?
Yeah, so it was like that.
You know, it's not enough that Windows 10 is going to be in every device and it's just one set of code or whatever, but you're also going to have another platform with almost like another app store. And
And it's the kind of direction they took with, you know, like the Xbox One, isn't it? There's little modules and little nodules that you can hook into, and I think they're taking that further and they're seeing where that can go. You can probably see other plugins for other applications, maybe a Photoshop plugin so you can directly have PSD files and things like that showing up. I don't know. There's other uses, but, you know, how many and how widely that will be used, unknown.
Yeah, and I could see things like, you know, WebEx and Citrix and all these kind of companies wanting to plug into Outlook as well, you know, so it's all just like one touch, have your meeting.
And I guess if you can save to the, you know, your own work drive, you know, the equivalent of a cloud drive, but in your own, inside your work, maybe there's an interest there. Plus the direction they're taking as far as it being universal apps and universal code base could mean actually not only do you get your little module put into Office for desktop, but it's also there for mobile and all those other things, other uses. So, potential interest there. They've also said they want to make sure that Windows is running on a billion devices within 3 years. Windows 10, this is. So that Windows 10 is due out. It can't be very long away now.
I was actually quite surprised. They've not released a release date. They're still saying, I was actually at a Microsoft kind of like small event that mm-hmm. we held internally, and they were still quoting summer.
Okay, so I mean, that you can still download it now, right? You can get a preview, the consumer previews and all that kind of stuff.
And they've done really well at updating it regularly. So every kind of month, 6 weeks, there's been like new features. There's even some stuff for Xbox that you can only get in Windows 10, like avatar type mm-hmm. things, but you can download it for free and give it a whirl.
But their aim is to get it onto a billion devices, so that they're clearly, I mean, as well as all the new devices, therefore, they're also aiming to get you off your old devices, off your old Windows 7, Windows 8. And I guess even further back than that, they would like you to be on the latest version of Windows. So, we'll see whether they manage to do that. But they're also saying they're trying to work out how they can get people developing back for Windows again. And one of the directions they've taken is they're going to be allowing you relatively simple ways to port Android and iOS applications inside of Windows 10. This will be a mixture of recompiling. I think they were even investigating virtualization of some aspects of this, running on emulators, things like that. So, yeah, so they're kind of acknowledging in that one step that Windows programming generally has dropped off. Yeah, there's less people putting cutting edge applications because they're working on mobile now. So they're saying, right, let's find a way of being able to get those applications in their native language, but compiled then for Windows.
Yeah, and it's absolutely tying in with this idea that they want to be everywhere. You know, maybe the previous regime, it was all, you know, if you want to develop for Windows, you have to get Windows and you have to be on Windows and you need to have a, you know, a Windows phone and it needs to be Windows code. And they're now saying, nope, you know, Microsoft's going to be everywhere. And this is just another extension. At first, I was a bit concerned. I thought, this is, you know, are you going to see a lot of subpar applications? So yes, you could go and get, what's new on iOS. So you can go and get like a, you know, Periscope for doing all that, you know, personal video streaming. Mm-hmm. And you could go and compile a version that kind of runs okay on Windows Phone.
That will happen. I mean, Apple were extremely adverse to this to start with, weren't they? They were banning people that were using these tools to do that because they believed it didn't give you that full functioning and feature set. That will be the case.
But what it seems to be is actually it's a bit more it's not so much a recompile as such. I mean, you can take the code, but it's not as straightforward as that. And I think that gives some hope that there's a potential of better quality. It's sounding
like they have effectively taken the SDKs for the two platforms and then rewritten the calls inside of a sort of Windows environment and infrastructure. So therefore you're calling the same functions effectively, but they are actually going through optimized pieces of code rather than a sort of an emulation. Having said that, that's still fraught with problems. And not only that, I'm pretty sure that one of the issues that even Google had with Java was them reusing or renaming or re-engineering underlying Java functions to enable the Android application to work. There was a big court case about that, and Android lost a lot of money because they successfully proved that code had effectively been copied, even though that was kind of the whole idea. And Microsoft, you know, are they going to come across the same issues?
I don't know, because there's been some stuff over the weekend that they've been releasing, almost like Mac and kind of iOS development supporting code on Windows ahead of even Apple getting it out on the Mac.
Mm.
So they do seem to be trying to be quite aggressive in this area. And it kind of leads on to the next bit, that they've launched this Visual Studio Code. So you can go to code.visualstudio.com. And there is you can download it, and it's called Code. You can download it for Windows, Linux, and OS X. OS X. I need to stop calling it OS. Henry would be like, it's just a virtual
I genuinely don't care. OS X is fine.
I know you don't, but I do. The
fact that it riles people is even better.
I know.
Yeah. Now, one thing Microsoft have always been exceptionally good at is developer support and developer tool generation. And maybe this is them realizing that is a key skill that they have. But like I say, they will be treading on some toes by doing this. We'll see whether those toes react in a bad way.
And I mean, just to touch on a couple of things, it's in code. It's a really modern engine. It supports Git out of the box. You know, so you don't have a lot of setup to do. And they really are chasing. I mean, you've kind of said it all there. They have been kind of famous for how much developer support they've kind of given, and this just looks to be now extending out to be on Windows, you know, so it's this same level across any platform.
There's also this more, you know, this direction towards just smaller but more streamlined tooling, and this looks like it's a, you know, the Visual Studio is obviously famous for being their big, you know, application, and this is real streamlined. This is a development environment designed to really focus down just on the code and the really core elements that you need.
And even the fact you can get Windows 10 for Raspberry Pi, that got released this week as well.
Windows did their licensing, didn't they? They cut down the licensing for, say, an underpowered machine. So if you want it on an old machine, you can do that for a lot cheaper.
And .NET is now out for Mac and Linux as well. So it's like it is some fairly, you know, from an architecture perspective, quite fundamental changes.
Yeah, no, and those are all the things that, you know, when Microsoft were running high, it didn't matter that it was locked into their infrastructure. They've kind of realized that they have to now widen it. They're a bit like the Sega.
Sega.
couldn't keep it just on the Sega machines. Right. Microsoft Edge. So we talked about this probably four podcasts ago, something like that. But this is going to be the replacement for Internet Explorer. They're trying to phase out Internet Explorer, although that will remain in the background as an option for you to use. But Edge is going to be the new name for their browser. And again, it's a very focused, cut down and streamlined browser engine that has some hooks in to the operating system, for example, desktop notifications. And also they're hooking in some functionality, things like Cortana, so the base core you know, underlying technologies they want to re-push out. So Cortana is going to be embedded in there as well. They reckon they're pretty excited about the speed and the underlying technologies. Are you excited?
I'm not excited, but it looked a nice clean browser.
I've becoming more and more disillusioned with how Chrome is memory hungry, hog, and, you know, less and less fast.
I was all in Chrome, and then when what are we on? Yosemite. When Yosemite came out, I went all in Safari just to try and get the. I liked the way they did bookmarks and the way it kind of worked across all the, you know, iPhone.
Has that come with downsides though? Because it doesn't work well with all web apps.
I guess the only thing I still see is the amount of sites that still rely on Flash. You still will get it, and I refuse to put Flash on.
Yeah.
So you still will get sites saying, "Please install Flash," and it's like, "Nah, I just won't bother." And I find it strange because, like BBC, if you just you can turn on a develop menu, you can go and, you know, and then you can just change your user agent to iPad, and all the videos play.
Yeah, it's to do with all the videos, and I mean YouTube released very very recently. They've moved from V2 of their API to V3, and that's caused all sorts of problems all over the place. And that again is due to, I believe, platforms that are still relying on Flash to deliver up video links and stuff like that. So they're actually trying to go more towards the HTML5, but that's not always easy.
No, because it's actually killing. I've seen a whole lot of app updates over the last couple of weeks for iOS, a lot of watch apps, but also some of them are just like YouTube related updates, yes. You know, support. But also, it's quite a few TVs are seemingly not going to work now.
Yeah, and I think it's not just the underlying, it's the fact the APIs have changed, but also it depended what the user uploaded that video as. So if they uploaded it in a format that would play during, you know, with the Flash player, but not the HTML5 player, at the time, I don't think YouTube converted. Since then, they've been doing that job of making sure it's in a format that will be going forward. But yeah, there's some interest going on there. It certainly caused some headaches, I could promise you. Windows 10 phone, they've been showing how flexible it's going to be as far as having being able to hook up to a full-time size screen and therefore effectively acting just like a desktop.
Yeah, the demo, I don't know if you watched any about it, was a three-hour long keynote.
I watched the pull-out elements of it, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the demo looked fine. I think it'll work with certain apps, and other ones I think would just be horrendous.
So they're saying the whole app design architecture is one of responsive design, so it can can flex to whatever size it is. And they were just almost proving that once you get to the sort of screen sizes of full HD, it will look just like a desktop application, because effectively they're all running from the same underlying code base. So their whole concept was that developers wouldn't have to develop a different application for the mobile device. It could be the same thing, just, you know, with the restrictions of the APIs and underlying. And it's, again, we've talked about it before, device agnostic, you know, display agnostic. So you could even hook up a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard, and effectively your phone would be running just like a PC. Like you say, it was a demo. He even said it's not really a demo. It's more like a simulation. So until their phones get this dual display capability, it's still in the visualization phases.
Yeah, and I actually thought, I wondered where the market was, but then I've seen a few people this week tweeting that this is a presentation rig, and it was an iPhone. And I don't even think it was I think one of them was a 6 Plus, but it was an iPhone 6 and the watch and a couple other bits and pieces. Mm. And they were basically knew the environment they were going to. They could fire up Keynote, stream it onto a TV and control it from the watch.
Yeah, so it's all, exactly. So it's all
I don't know.
It's called Smoke and Mirrors.
Yeah, staged.
Yeah, so it's called Smoke and Mirrors, but you can see, you know, once they get the hardware in place, that's the direction they want to take. And again, that's kind of on Microsoft. It's like taking that risk and showing something before it's all been sort of completed and all had all the, you know, I's dotted, T's crossed. HoloLens, another smoke and mirrors, really, because the videos that they put out, this is their device that adds augmented reality. So the videos they put out look spectacular. They look amazing. And you can see, again, that it's quite visionary in what they want to do, which is, you know, not just have 3D technology, but integrate that into the environment that you're already sitting in, whether that be gaming, whether that be modeling, whether that be you know, just adding additional features like, you know, a virtual TV on your wall, for example. It looks great, but the reality of it at the moment is that it is very much a vision, and the hardware is not capable of issuing that yet.
No, and the on-stage demo they did was really nice. It was that kind of maker bot style robot that came on, and then a woman engineer came on with the HoloLens on, and then called up a robot above that platform. They scanned the area. They were showing you all these control panels, and you were seeing it as if you were watching what she's watching.
Yeah.
But the kind of feedback from folk that then tried it, because actually, I don't know if you, maybe it was just me being cynical, but the main kind of presenter says, oh, we've got hundreds of devices here at build, and you could hear the crowd going whoop whoop, and I think they were thinking we've got there's one under the chair, and he yeah. says, and it was like, you've got hundreds of devices here so you can try it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, thanks. But the feedback seems to be, it's like although in the video it looks like the whole area it gets lit up, it's actually like a TV screen in front of you, and it's that little zone. And seemingly in that zone, it's quite, I mean, it's still impressive, but it's quite narrow compared to the videos. And there is a bit of, I mean, you said smoke and mirrors. I think this is probably one of the biggest smoke and mirrors we've seen at the moment. It's just how immersive is it if it is just that little area?
Yeah, so that, you know, peripheral vision is incredibly important for all that things. And, you know, we don't rely on our peripheral vision. We our eyes flick around, but the problem is if that doesn't move, which it wouldn't do with a bit of hardware, you know, that's the issue. So you actually have to physically move your head and if it's any wider than that letterbox, then it's artificially chopped off. It'll look wrong. So at the moment, works in small chunks, but say the videos give that whole immersive vision. So you can see where they want to go, and
until I try it, I almost give it a buy, because you've got people like NASA saying that they're using it. Autodesk then came out and says we're full in on it, our 3D tools will support it, and we'll also support 3D printing. You know, so they are making, you know, a big play.
I have no doubt we'll get there. We will get there. Yeah. Where, you know, even if it does involve a full headset, you know, that's taking a video feed almost from the outside rather than, you know, the real world coming through and being semi-transparent, if you like. So we'll see. And they built a tool that guesses your age, and everyone's been using this live scene. Did it work for you?
Well, I guess I was 40 and I'm 41.
So I put in a picture from about 3 years ago, and it pretty much got it spot on. So that said 34, and then I put one in from not very long ago and it guessed 47. So that's rubbish.
So I would say it just shows how you stress.
Badly.
Yeah, it's just stress over the last 3 years. It's just racing.
The correct, the one that he got right was face on, and this one was slightly 3/4, and I think that might have definitely was the reason I had haggard.
Yeah, and you can go to how-old.net, and it kind of generally works. But then someday, one of the women I follow on Twitter actually took her picture, and it said something like mid-40s. Then she took it into Photoshop and softened it and brightened it, and she was like, you know, it was like low 30s.
Yeah.
With the exact same area, and it's just...
They're all the signals that really do give away your age, though, aren't they? So,
yeah.
Clever. But anyway, there you go. So there's a fun tool, so you can go and have a look at that one. Google, they're trying to be getting around all the news arguments that they had. If you remember, I think this is probably a couple of years ago, this all really started kicking off. This is where news organisations start getting annoyed that Google was effectively just indexing their whole site, scraping news stories, and was showing them, therefore, those news stories in their search feeds. And I think wider into their news, sort of, they were going down the news route at that point, Google. So they put, you know, the news stories that they scraped, they put into their news feeds and stuff. News organizations obviously didn't like that, and that's why we saw people like Murdoch hide away all his news behind paywalls, stop block bots and things like that. And we're now back into a region where there's sort of compromises trying to be found, and Google is trying to do this by offering a fund that effectively licenses, therefore, their scraping of a site's news. So if they scrape your site and you give them permission to do that, they will give you some money, and there's a fund set up to do this. That's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong in any of those aspects.
No, it's spot on. It's almost like they're trying to buy a bit of support. Not everybody's supporting it, so Rupert Murdoch's News Corp are not supporting it, and there's a few others that are noticeably absent, but Google have said they're welcome to join. It's funding for the next 3 years. They're also paying for some Google staff to train journalists, but it's only three people. You know,
that's not their core. You know, their core is searching and scraping. So therefore, that's what they should concentrate on and give the money to the people who do is their core business.
And it's a similar deal to what happened in America, which seems to have gone down okay.
It feels like a good compromise, as in. When these initially started kicking off, we were all like, well, they're just a search engine. They're just scraping. But effectively, they are scraping, then turning that for their own advantage. So why not license it? That, you know, then they can continue to scrape and everyone's a little bit happier. And maybe this is a new model of journalism. Even small people can have their content put out there and maybe licensed. I doubt they'll get very much money from it. But the pot is 150 million euros. There is some money sloshing around there.
And they do seem to be one of, I don't know, I felt recently it's been more aggressive. Let's see, if I Google for something, they're actually putting other people's content up front and right in your face. You know, so rather than going through it, the site is there.
Yep.
And I think that's more noticeable recently than for maybe the last sort of 3-4 years.
They certainly put in features like that every now and again that you do happen to notice. Yeah, you think, oh, last one I searched definitely didn't do that. So yeah, all the underlying metadata is certainly getting stronger and stronger. I think as you know, content systems all become stronger at putting that meta into a sensible format as well. I think that's obviously what they're hooking into now. Protect your Google account. So they've set up Google have released an open source. I guess it's a browser plugin that will alert you if you're on a site that is actually a phishing site rather than a normal login.
So if you're using Chrome, which you're getting hacked off about, but if you're using Chrome,
maybe I won't be getting hacked off.
But basically, I'd another tool, and this will protect you. And certainly, I saw lots of Googlers tweeting that, like, just it's a no-brainer. If you use Google and you're on Chrome, get this installed.
Yep. So it's just designed to say both alert you when you're on a page that is not correct, or when you try and enter your password into a page that's not correct, and also if you have done it, it will say I think you should probably change your password. There you go, simple. Twitter, they've been not having such a good day. So first of all, they've released some new features. So they've released highlights. We talked about this again a few podcasts ago. This is basically when you haven't visited Twitter for a while, it will send you an update about what's been going on, and it will use various metrics to decide what is important that's happened since you last visited Twitter. And it'll base it on your followers, you know, the network as a whole, trending topics, things like that. And it's basically designed to pull you back in and come and have a look at what's going on in Twitter.
And noticeably, it's only on Android. So I tried it on my Nexus, and it's actually did an all right job. Mm-hmm. It did pull out stuff that I would probably have found interesting. I didn't have to search through 600 tweets.
Yeah. So the for the 400 odd that you skipped through, they might pull back the 10 that would have caught your eye. So that's potential there, and I'm sure it will roll out wider than Android very shortly.
Sure.
But they had a bungled performance release announcement, basically. So their earnings release was, well, slipped out early by a data firm. And it was a kind of a warning that they had not done as well as they said they were, or analysts in inverted commas said they were going to do.
Yes. And I mean, they're still... We've had this in the past. We were slagged off like Nokia and Microsoft for being, you know, rubbish. And that's why I can't be bothered doing the kind of numbers anymore, because the ones released this week were all just amazing. And Twitter, I mean, they're only going to make $2 billion this year, 2.17 billion instead of 2.27 billion. But originally they'd forecast 2.3 billion, and I think just the fact that I think, you know, like, user numbers are stalling. And there's also just as a bit of a smell around Twitter, because they have been so public about, well, it's not so much they've been so public, but I think there was some notable celebs kind of came out and said, I'm getting off this platform. And they really still, although Dick Costello, who's our CEO, did say we need to do better on that front, I still don't think it's enough. I saw some of the abuse, you know, some of the Guardian writers were getting this week. And people are getting banned, and they're just back on within, you know, 10 minutes.
Right, okay.
They're not doing any IP banning or anything like that. They are still...
I still think it's worth, you know, give them a bit of a chance. It's a complicated thing, and it sounds like they're making moves in the right direction.
It is complicated, but it's like the trolls have went to Twitter because that's the easiest place to do it now. You know, whereas I think in other places like Google Plus and Facebook, it is slightly more difficult to do and it's not as prevalent. Whereas in Twitter, it's just, horrible.
Problem is they've got to balance it off against, if they do more kind of identity and real name kind of proof before you get a Twitter account, which is probably the direction they're going to have to go in, that will cause sort of backlash from user base as well. People won't like it because it's supposed to be a pick up and play quick hit wonder, isn't it?
Yeah, and it also said they've done a partnership deal with Google's DoubleClick platform. And again, okay. I think there was just some doubt about the, you know, where they're actually making money from.
Yeah, because they're you know, they haven't made as much money from their, you know, their advertising platform as they would hoping. But you know what, their figures are still massive. That you know, their figures are within, I don't know, a 5% margin. I don't know, I can't work it out in my head, but their stocks fell 26% off the back of that. So it's not you know, it's investors reacting badly to another kind of bad performance issue, but we're still in troubled times. And to be honest, to my uneducated eye, it looked like they weren't far short of an estimate. I know when you get into the billions, even a 0.01 is a lot of money, but it seems like an overreaction. I'm sure it'll bounce back.
I know it's a bit like Apple with iPads doomed because we're only selling 1 million a week. You know, it's just not as it's just not as stellar as the iPhone is, and the Macs are doing well now, because the Macs in the last quarter made more money than iPads.
Yeah, so and that's like, because they haven't released a new iPad in goodness knows how long. So it's investors being short termist, and the problem is they keep making quick bucks on the short term and don't realise that sometimes it's better for the long term. But there you go, that's up to them. Facebook. They've gone and added video calling to the Messenger, which is a sensible next step. So now that they've split out that Messenger app into separate on mobile devices, they're now adding video calling in as an option. So there you go. If you want to do video calling in Facebook, you can.
Amazing how it's changed since the days it was only Skype.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like you're almost tripping over options.
Yeah, you can video calling is now easy, right? It's not a complicated thing anymore yet. Absolutely. No. Apple has come out and clarified it will not be allowing watch apps on the watch. And when I say watch apps, I mean what apps that are telling the time. So they, you know, any other apps are fine. You can you could probably tell the moon phases, but they're not having you telling the time on their watch.
I'm pretty sure it's probably not even the moon phases, because that's one of the little what they call complications that you can add to a watch face.
Right. Okay.
This made me chuckle. You know, I've got a watch, and I can't now download an app.
And as someone said, well, as people have said, there's only, was it 10 watch faces you can choose from? I know you can customize them in many different ways.
Yeah, there's 10, including a Mickey Mouse.
But I don't know why they're being so protective of the watch face. It seems a bit of a silly thing. I mean, maybe they're just trying to stop that ultimate spam that you get when you know that's, you know, the iFart apps that were out
and
there.
I think there's a bit of that. I saw a post that was saying there's like a couple of thousand or 20,000 Android Wear or Pebble, you know, watch faces. But the reality is there's maybe like, you know, 20
it's
to 40.
Most of it's spam.
You'd say 20 to 40 are like fantastic and worthwhile, you know, having installed.
There's going to be the tag one, you know, the ripoff of tag and stuff like that. And maybe that's it. Maybe they're going to try and license something like that, a watch face from tag.
I think it'll happen, whether it's like a next year thing, because usually you want to do everything now.
Yeah.
And Apple are famous for that kind of control. And it does get a bit frustrating. To be fair, the watch faces that are available are very nice. Unless you want a digital one, there's not much choice, which is surprising.
Mm.
But yeah, it made me chuckle.
They're also saying that yes, tattoos do affect the heart rate sensor. So there's been lots of sort of stories and news around that the heart rate sensor on the watch isn't particularly accurate or whatever. But apparently, if you've got a wrist tattoo, it makes it even less accurate depending on the tone and size of your tattoo.
Basically, if you've got a dark tattoo, you're stuffed.
Yeah. So clearly, no one in the hipster community up in Apple has a tattoo on their wrist.
Clearly, nobody at Apple either has a beard or has a tattoo.
What are the bit? Why no beards? I'm sure there's some beards in Apple land.
No, but you know what I mean.
So it's basically they have now updated their wording, and they're effectively the same. If you've got a tattoo, there it's going to affect the accuracy. Spotify have been doing some data mining on their infinite amount of user data, basically. And 42-year-olds listening to a little bit too much of Rihanna for their liking.
Yeah, seemingly when you get to 35, you reach what they've called music maturity.
Right. Right, and that means you go... that you're down from there on, you're on the downward slope.
So basically, you listen to your music, not the music that's around at the moment. Uh-huh. But then at 42, then you start to look back to popular charts. So it's basically a midlife crisis. You start to think, what are all these young folk listening to? I'll go and listen to...
I want to be young and hip, so I'm going to listen to the charts.
Yeah.
Apparent 42, all their data shows that is around the average age of 42 for men. There you go. They go listen to the pop music. Sky 3D is kind of dead without being dead, right?
Yeah.
So for all the palaver and broadcast around it, no one really uses it. So they've decided they're going to put it on demand only, which is only one short step away from not doing anything.
Yeah, and to be fair, they did try and do quite a lot of their own content.
So yeah, they tried the hardest.
Programs exactly. You know, I think BBC did like a Doctor Who episode, and that was it.
Yeah, they brought in a few other movies that were 3D as well, and that was about it. Yeah,
and I think they did Wimbledon one year in 3D, and I think there might have been an odd World Cup game, and that was about it. Whereas Sky were I'm not saying all in, but it was we've got a 3D channel. And I still remember they had football, and it just, I don't know, it just all felt a bit gimmicky for football. But for some sports, I thought it would benefit, like golf. I always thought golf would like you see the true contours more mm-hmm. than this kind of always looks a bit flattish on screen. But it's not taken off, and it's now done.
Say it's not done because they are still saying it's there for on-demand use, and that's a fair place for it. But you know, it's going to die away because it's not upfront in your face, and all those 3D. I mean, and most people have now concluded, the people that bought the TVs, that effectively it's too much of a faff to get, you know, get your glasses out and get all that sorted. It's not the future of TV. Not like the 4K is. That's going to be the next thing.
4K and what it seems to be everybody's talking about is HDR TV. So like an actual, this better range of colours, high definition range, seems to be making a bigger difference to not only the recording, but also the broadcast.
Yeah, because OLED, which has a massive, dynamic range, is obviously too expensive still to scale up. They still haven't figured out how to do it without it costing £10,000 for a reasonable size TV. But they've say all these clever companies that last year's or this year's conferences were showing how they could get that same effect, you know, this individual pixel effect, but without using organic LED. So that, you're right, it's going to be the direction. It's going to be what makes the next thing. They call it popping, don't they? It's going to pop. Small pixels and bright pixels. Valve decided they were going to try and let modding community sell upgrades on the through Valve stores. They were going to do a bit of payback so that those modders would get some revenue back, and the community basically absolutely imploded. I said, no, you can't do this.
And at first I thought this was actually quite smart. I didn't see the big deal. I think maybe the way they set it up, because I think 75% went to Valve, which seems very, very high percentage.
Yeah, I guess they were. Yeah, it didn't seem like a 20%, 80%, which is kind of what you'd expect. But then again, these are people modding with a game that they didn't develop. You know, they may be adding features to it. But again, who gets that money? And I maybe in order for Valve to get this, actually, maybe 20% was going to Valve, 50% to the originator, and then maybe another 20% to, which only adds up to 90%. That 10%, I don't know.
No, but at the same time, I've seen some playing that City Skylines as I mentioned every other week. And there's a guy that used to work for Maxis is doing a lot of new building models. Mm-hmm. But he's only doing it if somebody pays him in Patreon. So he's went to Patreon. So the stuff's available, but he's saying, I'm not going to invest the time unless I get, you know, if somebody wants to, you know, go and give me $100. Then I'll go and spend the next 4 or 5 days modeling a new building for them. So mm-hmm. I've even seen some fan websites starting to club together and say, well, if we get enough dollars, we can get them to go and do X, right, whatever that is, you know, like a big squirrel or yeah, or whatever it is. And I don't really have an issue with it, because if somebody's spending, you know, a week, 2 weeks,
it's a designer building something in. Yeah,
yeah, and some of the mods in Cities are all, some of them are quite intense. You know, it's taken a lot of work to do. And why shouldn't somebody get a reward?
Yeah, and say the community exploded in the kind of, it's going to lead to spam, it's going to lead to copyrights infringements, it's going to lead to general lessening of the mod community rather than a strengthening of it, which is a kind of standard reaction from someone who's used to something and then something new gets introduced. But generally speaking, I've seen this kind of, this trying to monetization properly of game mods go, and it does... It does steal away from some of the that free spirit that you get of someone just doing this, you know, out of their, you know, because they love the game. And often, you know, you've got some amazing stuff on the old kind of Counter-Strike, and, you know, there were complete reworks of those kind of games by people who just did it out of the love of doing it. And in fact, Counter-Strike was a mod community game, and that's where it all started off. And it's probably still one of the biggest played games online now. But anyway, so the community had a massive backlash, and Valve said, "Fine, we misunderstood this. We won't be releasing paid for mods on through Valve Store."
Is pretty much. I still think they'll come back at some point.
They'll do it for some games, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just can't see them not. But I do think the 75% going to, you know, Valve was a...
Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some back deals that they will do with, you know, content originators who made the original game to say, you know, this, some of this is a kickback to you, because they're not always on board with these things.
And I also should say that it wasn't so much going to Valve themselves, but it was a donation going somewhere else. But it was still like, you know, if I charge a dollar, then I get 25 cents, and 75 cents is going to...
X for a Valve and then X to somewhere else. Why is it going somewhere else, not me?
Yeah.
Yeah, why are you making a donation? Yeah, anyway, so yeah, that's not going to happen for Skyrim, at least. Like you say, it will appear again. It is a model, because like I say, some of these mods are worth money. There you go, that's the end of what we've got to talk about. So I guess, in fact, we should talk about your Apple Watch very briefly and what you think of it.
Okay, I've had it a week, and battery's okay on it. So a lot of people were worried up front about battery being, you know, a killer, and it's fine. It lasts a day easy, unless you're doing activity, because it instead of just monitoring your heartbeat every 10 minutes, it does it every 5 seconds, almost constant.
But isn't that one of the things, you know, the selling points was you could just have it monitoring these things all day?
Exactly, and that's why I've seen, in fact, a couple of mates on Twitter today were talking about battery life so good that I'm actually having to drain it to force it to finish. And it's like, no, I think you're being a bit silly. If I went a hill walk for five, 6 hours,
you
I'd
think
have
that'd
to turn
be
that off?
Yeah.
No, okay. I went for a run last Sunday, and an indoor cycle just to kind of warm down. Total time an hour. I'd been up for about 2.5 hours, and I was 30% through the battery.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's not going to last a 5-6 hour activity. And there is an option to go and turn that off, but I just feel battery life can't be described as good if I'm getting, you know, a day out of it and I'm having to manage it, and I can't use it in certain situations. And I also don't think we should be saying to a company like, oh, it's good if I can only get a day. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 days. It's back to when we talk about it when new phones come out, you know, it's slimmer, it's sexier, it's, yeah,
yeah, but it's taken a hit. Yeah, it's not actually improved.
Actually, the screen on it, I think, is fantastic, far better than I thought. The sizing of it is really good. I hadn't seen it in the flesh because I was a bit unwell, and although it came last Friday, I was in the Apple Store at Friday lunchtime, and I was kind of like really surprised. It's like, ooh, that is actually smaller than I thought. It feels very comfy in the wrist.
It's kind of an unremarkable looking thing, though, I have to say. It doesn't look special.
No, well, and I guess the one I've got is the aluminium one that's black, and it just looks like a black watch.
Yes.
Shaq got the stainless steel one. It does look a bit more impressive, just the kind of fit and finish on it is a bit nicer. And I think if you got a nicer strap for it, again, it would add to its appearance. I've just got the standard sport strap, which is fine during the day, certainly during a run, and maybe it's just me being an absolute sweaty beast. It does collect.
Lovely.
But I think any watch would, you know, I'm not used to wearing a watch. Usually didn't wear a watch. As I said, the screen's really good. I'm quite happy with the watch faces, quite happy with the kind of detection of, I think Verge had reviewed it and said it doesn't always come on when you flick your wrist and they had to force it. I found it to be very good. So whether, you know, and even I've not seen any delays in that area.
What about general actual functionality of it? As in, do you find it useful?
Yeah, so like health tracking, I've found it actually to be very good. And I actually find the display, how they display your stats during a run or a cycle, to be actually really nicely done.
Beyond health tracking then, which you can obviously, you know, there's plenty of options for that nowadays.
I would start to struggle, and that's why I did a big write up in the blog through the week, and it's definitely not an essential, you know, it's not an essential piece of kit right now. It is almost like a second screen for your iPhone. And it is really nice. And I guess Brian used to talk about this with the Pebble. See, just to go and glance at a notification and just read it, and then I don't need to pull the phone out and unlock it. You know, so anything like a WhatsApp message or a reminder or a calendar appointment, I can just see it, done. And that is nice. And this, but Pebble used to do the same. It just, I think Pebble and Android had a lot more, you know, sophistication compared to on iOS. It was always a bit hacked. There's just small things, you know, like controlling music. Again, really easy to do from the watch. Using Siri has surprisingly been actually
You've actually
really
done
good.
It. You've talked to your wrist.
I've talked to my wrist, and it's for sending messages, it's far easier just talking than it is. Yeah. And you can do the talking and then just send as audio, or you can translate it. And it's been mostly accurate. It's not always there. There's a thing called like glances it does, and these are like almost like little widgets, and they are mostly awful. Right. especially third party ones. There's a couple of the kind of stock ones are quite nice. Apps at the moment are mostly terrible. So they're all running from the iPhone, and it's hard to I'd be hard pushed to like sit here and say that is a killer app. You know, launching Dark Sky, that's nice. One Password is probably my closest, because I can put four or five key things that I'd need access to. So like at work, there's a locked door that has a key pass entry. I'm only going to be in there once every 6 months.
Yeah.
So having that just able to access it quickly on the phone, get the key, you know, key pass, and then I've got that 6-digit code, that is handy. But it's not essential. And I think until we see Apple change it, that you can actually write apps on the phone, then you'll only maybe see truly what developers come with. I mean, some of the stuff like the games developers are doing, I just think it's a waste of time. I just don't get it.
Okay.
It's just not.
Well, it's a nice device that's still looking for its killer feature, really.
I don't see anything that it's doing over like Android with a Pebble that I would say that's why you have to buy an Apple Watch. I think design-wise, it is a better design than what I've seen in other devices, but I think, you know, design's down to taste. And I think battery life is just about acceptable. I do think the screen is really good. And I actually like the fact that when I see the time, I can also see the weather, and I can also see my activity for the day. And these other little things I do find useful. Yep. You know, in my next kind of calendar appointment, it's like, yeah, that is quite nice. You know, I do like that ahead of a normal watch.
So for me then, it's, you know, it does sound a bit like, maybe now is not, unless you're, you know, particularly want it, now is not the time. Next version, few SDK releases down the line.
Do you remember I said to you I had a fear of missing out? Everybody's talking about it, and that's why I ordered one. If you've got that, you don't need a watch. You're not missing out on anything. As I said, it's nice. I've actually enjoyed it more as the weeks were on, and I'm probably using less apps, but even just having that, you know, the time, it works, and those little more convenient things. And even in town yesterday, Shaq phoned. And see, if Shaq phones, usually my phone's in the pocket. Chances are I won't hear it, even though it's vibrating and it's ringing. Really clear on the wrist. It was just like...
And it's probably, you know, there's also an element of you're in that period now where you're desperate to try new things on the phone. You're trying to see what's there. And actually, when it moves into just your day-to-day, actually, what is this thing useful for? You'll find more benefits as time goes on, rather than looking for that killer app straight out, downloading a whole ton of stuff that really is a bit disappointing. So, the general concept of having the extra screen. So, okay, I'll give you that.
Most of the third-party apps are guff.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'm just like not interested in. And I think if anybody's sitting there saying, "Oh, this is fantastic," it's like, nah, I think you're spinning it. I can see other things, like I think if we're in America, you can just double tap on one of the buttons to do Apple Pay. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that would be nice and convenient. The messaging is a bit odd. See, there's like the 3D stuff, the 3D avatars that they set up, the new kind of emoticons, awful. Sending Shaq heartbeats, no.
Have you done that?
All the time.
little doodles.
All the time.
Of cocks.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
There's obviously been a lot of demoing going on as people have been quite interested in seeing it.
Sure.
And because I didn't even mention Force Touch. There's actually quite a few things in the watch that I think will come to phones and they'll be really nice. So you kind of press down.
Does that, and that works?
Touch. Oh, that was other.
And that works okay?
Oh, yeah, really nice. And honestly, devilment. I was in the Apple store yesterday in the new MacBooks.
They've got the Force Touch pad.
Clicking.
Is it that good, is it?
It's clicking. And I said to Shaq, and Shaq comes over and was like, no way. So he went around and played it, and it is, honestly, it's like, that is a click. And you're looking at it and you can see it's not moving, but it's clicking.
Okay. I might be in the, I might have to get a new laptop at some point. So yeah, mate, that does excite me.
And normally the one tweet put me off the MacBook. The screen's really nice. I actually thought the keyboard was nice, but you might find the throw is not enough. It's one of these ones you have to go and try. It's so thin. But somebody put up a screenshot that said, your Mac's overheating. You need to shut down Tweetbot or we will put your Mac to sleep. And I thought, wow, fair enough. You don't know what else was running, but usually they say that's, you know, they pick the most energy, you know, the poorest energy, and maybe he was running videos in it and running multiple accounts or doing.
But you don't want your laptop saying that. That. You'd rather have a laptop with a fan than one that had to shut down because you're running an application.
Because the air, I hardly hear the fan, and then if I'm doing something where it's processing a bit more, it kicks in, and you can see the temperatures kicking up, that's why the fan's on.
So that's almost again design beyond ability. Yeah, that does worry me about Apple because they do that. They do that quite a lot. But there we go. Okay.
They do. And then I saw somebody tweet saying that they had four of their friends in the market for a laptop. All of them are saying they want them a new MacBook, which was like...
Well. Like I say, they've cannibalized Air a bit, so we'll see because, you know, but MacBook and Air together are a pretty formidable combination. Okay, so let's say the analysis at the moment is it's got... future potential, it's got general use now, but future potential and maybe a few releases down the line. The only other question I had about stuff you bought, Bloodborne, the game. Did you persevere with it or have you? So I've just started playing Dark Souls 2.
Okay.
Precursor. And it is incredibly soul destroying and depressing and annoying and frustrating. But I have to say that I've had a couple of moments where, I can see why it gets such high reviews. It's strange just playing a game where the enemies can hit back harder than you can hit them. And it's a complete culture shock. But actually, when you start actually understanding it, you have to actually physically learn the game. There are elements of it where I can see why it gets such high scores. But I tell you what, a controller's going to lose its life.
And I must admit, I've maybe put a couple hours in tops.
It's not enough. That should be the first.
It was the first day. There was no compulsion to go back to it. I was still playing through like Drive Club. I'm still playing golf, playing those games.
Yeah. For Dark Souls 2, I had to go and look at online, walkthroughs. And they're there for, and actually. It's kind of what they want you to do because there is no signaling. There's no trail to say go left at this junction and then you'll find the area you're supposed to be in. Like day one, I wandered into an area that I definitely wasn't supposed to be in, and you think, what the hell is the point of this?
You know what I had to say? So Bloodborne, you kind of start off, and this character should kill you, and I fought him a couple of times, and then there was a glitch, and he ended up behind scenery, so he couldn't kill me. So I ended up wandering through and I was walking through like Yharnam and stuff and I had no weapons because you're supposed to die and then pick up weapons and then you can start to actually play through the game. And I'm like, what? And it was just horrible. It was like, this is nightmarish.
Every 2 seconds. When I was eaten by a rat and the rat was tiny and I thought, what is the...
And
What is the point? But anyway, but like say, I can see now why they people get so excited about it, because it does give you the absolute fear.
and the thing that was a nice touch in Bloodborne is you can actually leave messages for other players.
Yes, you can do that throughout the whole series. Yeah.
So it was like that was quite nice because there was loads of people leaving little things for you to kind of pick up on, you know, and that was nice. But I want to say I will go back to it, but I know Project Cars is coming out this week, and that's going to eat up quite a bit of time because that does look quite special.
I am persevering with Dark Souls 2, and I will be interested to see because if I do get into it fully, it you know Bloodborne if it is as good as everyone says. You know, that might spur my purchase of a PS4. We'll see.
Yeah, come and join us on PS4. Play golf, play Project
No need
Cars.
At the moment because I really don't play very much.
No, I know.
Anyway, there you go. So that's the end of our podcast for today. If you want to find out more about who we are, what we are, what we do, digitaloutbox.com. Email info@digitaloutbox.com. Twitter, digitaloutbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. You can follow along my racing career, academyracer.co.uk. Next race is next weekend at Donington. Ian, where can we find you?
Bloggersiand.net. And I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
Wunderbar. Okay, we will speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra. We'll be right back.